WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Monday edition of The Opening Bell. New York Times senior economic correspondent Neil Irwin has written about the rapidly changing business and economic environment. His new book is called How to Win in a Winner-Take-All World, the definitive guide to adapting and succeeding in high-performance careers. Neil is with us this morning on the telephone. Neil, first of all, thanks for being with us this morning. I want to begin with the premise for the book. Talk to us a little bit about why you have written it and what you found out.
Sure. So in my day job, I write about economics and usually big picture, how the world is changing, how the economy is changing, how the corporate landscape is changing. And what I've talked to people about at night are really two sides of the same coin. That there's really that the changes happening in the macroeconomy are the ones that are making careers so tough to navigate and so complicated to make sense of. So I wanted to make sense of that and figure out what are those lessons about how the economy is changing that can help you have a better career.
And to do that, you've done some really good research here. You went to companies, big companies and small companies, companies like Microsoft, and talked to people there about how they're succeeding, and small companies as well. Talk to us a little bit about what you found on both sides of that coin, the big and the small.
So what I really believe is happening is there are more and more firms of a very certain type that dominate the modern economy. And they tend to be big, though not always. They tend to be technologically sophisticated. They are global. They are really creating advanced products that, in no matter what field you name, are really more and more dominant. It's true in banking. It's true in retail. It's true in technology. It's even true in things like consumer products. For example, I went to Chicago where Suntory Beam is based, the spirits company. And what I want to understand is, what does it take to be the kind of worker who really thrives in those organizations, who really succeeds? And I think there is a model for that that anybody can emulate that doesn't always come automatically, but if you work at it, you really can be the person who will be successful in those types of organizations that dominate the modern economy.
Would that be the glue person?
Yeah, so part of what happens when these companies are so big, so complex, it takes people with a lot of very different technical skills to create good products, to create innovative products. But the problem is you have all these people who do different things. It makes it really hard to coordinate and make teams work well together. So if you're the person who, yes, you have to have good technical skills and whatever your specialty is, but if you can make a team work together, if you're a glue person who makes that team stick together well, you're immensely valuable. You're the kind of person who that company really can rely on and will have a long career. I use the metaphor, it's kind of like a relay race, right? So to be an effective sprinter, you just have to run fast. To be effective on a relay team, yeah, you have to run fast, but you also have to get that handoff right. In modern organizations, if you're somebody who runs fast and can do that handoff effectively, you're especially valuable.
And so if you're not already that person, and the book goes into some detail here, but give us a sense of what we can be doing to make ourselves better fit into that role to become the glue person.
So I think the most important idea is around adaptability. And, I think we tend to, look, when you're growing up, if you're good at one sport, you keep playing that sport. It's nice to be good at things, right? We all lean into the thing that we are naturally talented at or naturally, comes naturally to us. But what I found over and over is that the people who really are able to become these glue people, who are able to really thrive and have long careers in these types of organizations, are people who cultivate from an early age a sense of adaptability and push themselves to do things that are outside their comfort zone. I think this is especially true in the early phases of a career, in college, grad school, anything like that. That's where the stakes are the lowest. You can try things that don't come naturally, and by trying that and doing that over and over again, you become better at becoming that glue person who's so valuable.
I know that some of us, when we hear the term big data, we often think, well, that's going to be something negative against me. But in this case, big data can actually help us become better employees. What did you find in your research?
Yeah, there's a tendency to think of all the work that companies are doing to try and understand what makes a worker effective. We all have different dashboards of what results are being achieved. That's kind of used for employee evaluations and things in a negative sense. I think the real idea is to take advantage of those tools to make yourself better. So I love the metaphor of baseball. So if you're if you go back to Moneyball, the book and movie from the last decade. There's this entire analytics revolution going on in baseball that is all oriented around teams becoming better, making better hiring decisions, who they're going to sign, who they're going to start, things like that. But what's happened more and more is the best players are making good use of that data as well. They're understanding, where is there a hole in my, where I'm swinging the ball, where I'm missing more balls than I should? Where am I swinging at pitches that actually I shouldn't have swung at? What's my launch angle? How efficient are my routes when I'm trying to field? And the idea of the player taking advantage and taking control of that data, making good use of it, has a real metaphor in the corporate world. I have a case study in the book on Microsoft where they had a team that wasn't functioning well. People were unhappy with their work-life balance. They were afraid they were going to lose some talented people. They figured out through analyzing email and calendar data, the problem was they spent too much time in big meetings, and they had to restructure how people spent time to make sure that people were happy with their jobs. That's an example of how you can use these tools to make yourself more effective.
We've all been taught, at least most of us, I think, have been taught that if you show up at work every day, you're loyal to a company and you work hard, you're going to have a good career. That's not necessarily the case anymore, is it?
It's not. And I think we've been living through this for 30 years or more. This idea of having a career, it's like a marriage. You sign on with a company, you stay there for decades, you stay there indefinitely. It's not true anymore. Career is now a series of hookups. Now, those can last long or short periods of time. This is not necessarily saying that you have to quit your company every 2 or 3 years and move somewhere else. But I think what it depends on is this idea of reciprocity. Is the company really supporting you, enabling you to broaden your experiences, develop as a person, grow as a person, become the type of person who's more valuable to more types of organizations? Or are they just trying to shunt you into one role and let you just keep doing that job forever? If you're at the first type of company, that's great. You can stay there for a long time and really have a lot of opportunity. If you're that second type of company, maybe it is time to look around and look for a place where you can stretch yourself in new directions.
Yeah, and in this job market, too, where we have such a tight job market, employers are doing all kinds of things to attract employees. The flip side of that is we as potential employees have to do a better job of recruiting our companies, don't we?
Yeah, I think it really is a two-way street. And, I think a really important idea is that when you take a job, it's not just about the compensation and the benefits you receive. It's not just about the health plan and, this much salary. It's also about what learning and growth opportunities is that organization giving you. And there's a big difference between a job where you're able to really push yourself into new skills, as I talk about adaptability. Is it an organization that encourages you to be adaptable, that like enables you to stretch yourself into new fields that you might not have on your resume? Or again, do they just want to kind of put you in a silo and let you stay there indefinitely?
Yeah. One of the things I think a lot of people grapple with is they have life and career goals. Putting those two together in the same track is often very difficult. Do you have any advice for people on how to do that?
Yeah, so I did a little math, and if you start working when you're 22 years old and you retire when you're 65 years old, and if you sleep 8 hours a night, you have about 250,000 hours of waking hours in that kind of prime years of most people's careers. That's the biggest constraint on everything. And I titled this book not how to make the most money, not how to become a CEO, but how to win. And I think everyone's definition of winning in a modern economy is different. And I think I'm not prescriptive. I'm not going to tell you that you need to spend this many hours at work, you need to spend this many hours on your hobbies or with your family. But I do think we all need to be thoughtful and deliberate about making those trade-offs, because making those trade-offs within that 250,000-hour constraint is the most binding constraint of them all. And I think being deliberate and making sure at the end of the day you are allocating those hours according to what your own priorities for your life really are, that's a really important idea to me.
And two, the idea is very positive. The outcome of the book, too, is one where people really can have a career that, however they describe winning, however they think of winning is winning, whether it's being having a rewarding career or having a lot of money, all of that is possible.
It is. And, look, I use the metaphor a little bit of a sailboat. If you go out on a nice sunny day in a sailboat and you don't really know what you're doing, you don't know how the winds and the currents work, you're just kind of going out and drifting around and trying to have some fun, it's probably going to be fine. You're probably going to get back perfectly okay. If you go out on a stormy sea, you really need to understand the winds and the currents and these things that you can't control but really will determine whether you're able to get back safely. And we're in a tumultuous time. We're in a time of rapid change in how companies work, how you know, the nature of what a job is. So you really need to understand those winds and those currents. So I wrote this book to try and help people do that, to understand this economic landscape that you can't control, but you can adapt accordingly.
Yeah, and some of those winds blowing right now, and it's why this book is very timely, is this discussion of big tech companies, the government maybe going in and thinking about breaking some of them up. That could change the landscape in a big way, couldn't it?
It could. And I write about these superstar companies, the winners in the winner take all economy. There are real problems with that. And there's a lot of evidence, for example, that big tech platforms, as you say, have power over our discourse and the political system that's problematic. There's evidence that, corporate concentration may be something that depresses wages and is the reason, workers haven't been getting big raises over the last couple of decades. And I think those problems are very real, and it's very legitimate for the political debate to circulate around what should be done about those questions. But I really do believe that this way of working I'm describing and what it takes to have a successful career in these types of organizations is going to remain true no matter what happens in Washington, no matter what happens in terms of breaking up tech companies or stricter antitrust enforcement or whatever it might be. I think what I'm describing is a fundamental way of working that's endemic to these big organizations that are dominating the modern economy in the same way that industrialization 100 years ago, just because they brought in the rough edges of industrial capitalism doesn't mean it went away.
Neil, I know this, the book is going to be great for people to read, but as you finish it, is it left you with other questions that you'd like to answer perhaps in the next book you write?
I think all this stuff is changing so fast. I think this is a really useful book for helping people navigate their career in the next few years. As I get older, I'm 40. I'll be curious to see if I want to kind of update for how this stuff can apply as you reach more advanced stages of your career. I think being able to reinvent yourself, it's hard enough when you're in your 20s and 30s to reinvent yourself. I think as people get in their 40s, 50s, and 60s, seeing how those changes and how those impulses change will be fascinating. So have to save that for another day.
All right. Well, we appreciate you being on with us this morning.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
Neil Irwin is a New York Times senior economic correspondent and the author of How to Win in a Winner-Take-All World, the definitive guide to adapting and succeeding in high-performance careers.